How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast.
Hello and welcome to How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast series with myself, Nadina Regan. In this podcast series, we talk about leadership through talking to female leaders. This week, I'm delighted to tell you that our guest on the podcast is Leonora O'Brien, entrepreneur, pharmacist, and founder of Pharmapod, a global company that develops pioneering software to reduce medication errors and deliver safe services for patients worldwide. Raised in County Roscommon, O'Brien's first job was helping out part-time in her grandfather's cafe and bookshop. At 14, she began working in her uncle's clothes shop in Galway on Shop Street during the summers. While she had ambitions to be a journalist as a teen, she wrote her first piece for the Roscommon Herald at the tender age of 14, she decided instead to study pharmacy. And after graduating, she took on major roles, including that of Chief Pharmacist of the Unicare Pharmacy Group, and also serving as consultant for the Pharmaceutical Society of Ireland. O'Brien founded Pharmapod in 2012. In the podcast, you'll hear her talk about exactly why she was inspired to do so. And she describes the personal stories that have affected her, of people who have suffered because of medical error. Before we go to Leonora O'Brien, though, I wanted to mention one quick positive story for you from the podcast series to date. You might remember that in our last podcast, one of our listeners had gotten in touch to ask about mentorship and how she could find a great mentor. Well, I'm delighted to tell you that our guest on that podcast, Hazel Chu, Lord Mayor of Dublin, offered in the wake of the podcast to help out that particular listener in terms of finding a great mentor. So the two of them have been in touch with the aim of doing exactly that. So that's one positive story. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, if you have questions or thoughts, you can get in touch with me via Twitter DM at Nadina Regan. And so, without further ado, this is Leonora O'Brien's How I Did It.
How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast.
Leonora O'Brien, founder of Pharmapod, you are very welcome to How I Did It. How are you keeping?
Excellent, Nadine, and thanks so much for having me on today.
Delighted to have you on. And to start, for the uninitiated, could you tell us a little bit about the story of you and your company, the company that you founded, Pharmapod?
Pharmapod was founded 8 years ago now, and I'm a pharmacist by background, and I had worked in various roles. Like, I was the chief pharmacist in Unicare Pharmacy, which was the largest pharmacy group in Ireland at the time. And then I was European manager for a corporate pharmacy group in Europe. So I got to work across 8 European countries. And when I was working, just say, in my chief pharmacist role, I would have been legally responsible for all the pharmacists in the organisation and making sure that our patients were safe and that there were system and processes that were, you know, protecting patients. And, I was legally accountable as well. You could be up before a court of law or a fitness practice committee if something had gone wrong. So I just saw a lot of, you know, patient harm happening in every country, and that was avoidable. So that was the real driver for me. One of the cases, for example, that really resonated with me was the case of Melissa Sheldrick in Canada, and her 8-year-old son was given a wrong drug by a pharmacy team, and he died. Andrew passed away overnight just with 1 5-mil spoonful. So he was supposed to be given tryptophan, you know, innocuous medicine for a sleep disorder. And then it was found out 6 months later, the toxicology report showed that he had 3 times the toxic dose, adult dose, in his system of baclofen, which is a multiple sclerosis drug. So those kind of things that are preventable, you know, that's what drives me. That's what really drove me to set Pharmapod up. So I'm a pharmacist by background, and I think embarked on the entrepreneurship journey to solve a problem, which I think a lot of founders do. It's all about solving a problem.
And what is success for you? I mean, what makes you feel like this is the right thing? I mean, people often associate entrepreneurship with accruing great financial rewards, but actually a lot of entrepreneurs would say that it's something different that drives them.
Yeah, I think, well, success for me would be following my own agenda, really. You know, you've one crack at this life, and you can't live by someone else's agenda. So you can't let someone else chart your course. So success for me is really being a woman in the arena, you know, to take that reference from a speech, Theodore Roosevelt's Man in the Arena. You know, you very much need to be out there and trying something. And if you fail at that, then at least the success is at least trying. So that's hugely important for me. And success as well is about surrounding myself with people that respect each other in their work, people who you enjoy working with, you know, staying away from, you know, a blame culture or people that try to undermine you, because I just really feel that life's too short for that. So success to me is getting up in the morning, enjoying my work, loving who I work with. We have that added bonus at Pharmapod that we help people, or we have a purpose beyond profit. So helping patients and the benefits and the scalability of that solution internationally is really what drives us forward.
Can you tell me a little bit, actually, just talking about scalability, about, I suppose, the metrics of the company in terms of where it started and where it's grown to? Where are you at currently, and what are the hopes?
So we have launched during the pandemic. We launched in the US, which was great because it shows how we can do business virtually. You know, we have a virtual product, but before the pandemic, we would have been very used to, you know, hopping on planes and going to meetings, even over to the UK. Ireland is our first market, and we're still headquartered here, but we have a lot of our first customers were in the UK, which is the natural step. Canada then was big for us, and there's, you know, over 60% of the pharmacies in Canada utilising the solution. We have a global vision and we're getting there. We also launched in Australia throughout the pandemic. So, you know, it's an exciting time for the company.
That's so exciting. And, you know, I think one of the things that has been an effect of this pandemic is that everybody is thinking so much more now about their own personal health, but also about how health systems globally are organized, because we're all so conscious about even something as simple as whether you might be able to be on a reserve list for COVID, for example, if you have a vulnerability or if you're older. The very system of how we keep track of patients has come under view and under scrutiny in a big way. I believe you have a COVID app actually in preparation.
We do, absolutely. And so it helps to manage the administration of the vaccine. You know, you can do all the consultation online, but so then when the patient actually comes in, you can book your appointment. So when the patient comes in to the pharmacy or to the GP's practice or wherever the vaccinator is, to the clinic, they can be the time taken to collect all that data is reduced. So you're minimizing the contact. You pre-qualify the patients as well, so you make sure that they haven't had any symptoms before they come in. So it's keeping the healthcare professional safe, but it's also keeping the patient safe. And then, you know, they get their vaccine passport and all of that afterwards as well. So all the records are kept securely.
Yeah. And you mentioned it's not a pivot as such, but one of the things I would imagine about being an entrepreneur, and particularly in this market, is how adaptable you have to be. Is that something that you've been very aware of through your career, that you need to keep turning and learning and moving in a way?
Yeah, you're like a, you know, the massive big corporate groups that are in business for decades are like that big cruise liner. And sometimes it can be hard to turn it, and it could be slow turning. But when you're a small organization, you know, one of your strengths is that you're this little speedboat flying up along, and you can pass out one of these cruise liners if you keep agile, because you have the ability to turn quickly and pivot quickly. But you do have to have a higher people with an agile mindset, which we do have. It's only when you work with people that don't have the agile mindset, and that, you know, there are different priorities. So that's important to be able to navigate through. And but a lot of people that, you know, navigate towards a startup company have that mindset anyway. They're very agile. They love to try new opportunities that come their way. They're curious to try other markets and to try other features in their product, etc. So you have to constantly evolve, absolutely, and have that CQI mindset, we call it, a continuous quality improvement mindset, that you're trying to stay ahead of the game all the time.
And are you good at sort of pushing forward, whether it's into new markets or into new meetings, you know, for funding rounds? Are you the kind of person who always had that innate ability to lead and to drive? Or was it something that you had to learn and kind of say to yourself, Leonora, I'm going to come out with this confident attitude?
Yeah, I think I have an innate confidence, but I, you know, investment was something that we just had to do. And I guess I think if I start a business now, it'd be very different. I mean, times have changed in 8 years. You know, there are things like accelerators that we would have gone through. We went through Launchpad from NDRC, and that was an amazing, amazing support. But, you know, a lot of accelerators will take equity because, you know, and so I would look for accelerators maybe that don't take equity, and supports like the Competitive Start Fund with Enterprise Ireland. They have been an amazing support as well. But, you know, they take 10% of a company for 50,000. So you're only valuing your business at 500,000. So I think to be ambitious, there are definitely things I would do differently. But, you know, so you are learning. You're learning as you go. And the formula back then was, you know, you do your accelerator program, you get X amount of investment, you take as much investment as you can because you'll have a smaller piece of a bigger pie. But I wouldn't necessarily promote that for future founders, because you're the one that's really putting in the graft and getting on those red eye flights and flying around the world, disrupting your life. So, you know, you really should, you're building the pie, you're baking the pie. You should be able to eat the pie with your family at the end of the day. So you can't lose sight of what's important for you. So I think that's more coming to the fore now. And that's the growth mindset as well. You know, you have to look after founders and make sure that they are heavily vested to the end, because that's, you know, the company will really succeed if that's the case. So there are things that I'm learning, you know.
What particular strategies would you advise for women who are starting out, who want to achieve their goals in that kind of similar industry?
I think to be intentional and to speak to as many people as possible that have gone along that journey before. So if you're in a certain sector, and, you know, just say fintech, you know, to talk to as many people that have gone through that journey before. And if you can, to you know, sign up or join a network. So for example, I'm a participant on the Going for Growth program run by Paula Fitzsimons, and Enterprise Ireland has supported that as well. But, you know, that is a phenomenal program. There's lead entrepreneurs that have round tables every second month, and you hold each other to account. You know, you meet other people that have similar situations. So advice would be to get, you know, surround yourself with as many like-minded people, because sometimes you've got a huge ambition, but people in your direct surroundings mightn't, you know, necessarily understand that or be in a position to support that in terms of thinking. So you do need to find your tribe, if you like, through networks. And then you just think, well, this is all normal, and I'm surrounding myself with ambitious people that match that, or more ambitious people. You know, go to as many, you know, I went through Google sponsored us to go through the Black Box program in Silicon Valley, for example. And that was amazing, because I was surrounded by people that had ambitions to change the world. And that really opens your mind. And so you feel, OK, my ambition was correct from the start, you know, and just to stay away from people who chip away at your ambition. But also to take a mentor. I think mentors are really important. If you try and have two or three mentors at any one time, maybe from different backgrounds, to challenge your thinking and to support you along, I think that's definitely an important thing.
Mm. Are there any particular female leaders who inspire you?
Crikey, loads. I think I really draw a huge energy from networks that I'm in. But yeah, so one lady that comes to mind would be Una O'Hagan. So she's the managing director of Mars Pharmacy Group. And Una was actually one of our first customers, because there's no better way to support a female entrepreneur or female in business than actually, you know, backing them, buying your product. I know ours is a product for pharmacy or healthcare, so it's not everyone that can do that. But, you know, Una, she was one of our first customers. She's still, you know, with us. And she's a lead entrepreneur on the Going for Growth program. So she has that, you know, giving back mentality and paying it forward mentality. And, you know, leaders like that who are open about how tough the journey was, because, you know, there's no real inspiration to be gained from listening to people who gloss over the journey and say everything was easy. I think we're inspired most by people that admit that, God, there were really tough times, there were challenges, but this is how I overcame them, this is how I pivoted in that situation, or and to share their learnings. And that's what Una's brilliant at that, and she's such a female leader and visionary. So,
and speaking to that, it's a hard question to answer, I know, but I have been asking it of people during the series, if they could tell me about one time when they did experience a horrible failure and what they did to pick themselves up from it. Because you're right, you know, it's only really through hearing those stories that I think everyone else gets the opportunity to kind of learn from it.
Yeah, do you know, I think in software anyway, and in most businesses, you're a people business. Your people are so important. So one of the things I think that early stage companies don't do is they don't invest in HR or people operations. So I think, again, you know, most of the things that I would change in hindsight are, you know, performance management things, you know, changing team that mightn't be a fit and changing, and you're making those decisions earlier. So they all seem to, you know, circulate around that, you know, not having a HR person from the get-go. And you don't have to have somebody full-time, but if you're starting a business, if I was doing that again, I would certainly get people operations advice and set up the performance management framework at the word go. And then, you know, they really help you put rigor around making sure that your people are the best fit, some rigor around your recruitment, because that will really make the difference. And it really does. You see the differences night and day when you have invested in that side of things. So I think that's definitely a learning for me. But we make failures every single week. There's failures. And I think you just learn as a founder to make failure your friend. You know, it's your constant companion, because you fail in small ways every day, but it's honestly, that is what helps you learn and grow. And there's always uncertainties when you're starting a business, especially when you're new in a space and there isn't many competitors there to look at. But you're in the dark sometimes, you bump into things, and that's fine. But as long as you're learning and you have that growth mindset and take those failures as an opportunity to improve, then you're fine. But there's failures every single day. There's challenges and ups and downs. It's a roller coaster. But I think just being positive and having a learning mindset is crucial.
And the tech world has been, you know, it's been well documented that it's quite male orientated. And there have been quite a few articles actually in recent years about how women have suffered somewhat through being in whether boardrooms or office meetings where simply the overwhelming presence is male. I wonder if you have experienced sexism in the workplace because of the fact that you're in quite a male tech world at times.
Yeah, and I think I have, and that was the first time I was even aware of any equalities in the workplace was when I went into the tech world. Firstly, in the accelerator program back then, it was, you know, I think we were one of the only female led businesses in the accelerator. So, but Enterprise Ireland you know, organisations like that have done a great job at addressing that imbalance. I think, yeah, you do. As I think as a woman, every woman will say that we experience it daily. I would say I experience it daily. And it's hard to pinpoint one particular time, but there's thing you know, I for example, you know, I've gone traveling a lot with some sales colleagues of mine, and David in particular, a colleague of mine. We would have gone to lots of international conferences, and you'd be checking in at a hotel, for example, and they talk to David automatically. They presume he's paying the bill. They give him a better room. They do all of these things, you know. And then, but David was brilliant, and he's like, "Oh well, you know, my boss is here. You can talk to my boss." And then, you know, and that was really powerful, because I think if men are more aware of how powerful it is when they step in to back you up, I think that's important. And actually, for International Women's Day this year, instead of going on a female panel and you know, talking to, you know, lots of female colleagues and peers, you know, I accepted an invite to talk to a construction company that has just like about 11% female colleagues, and that was really interesting. So, and you know, so I think really go to the Gemba, go to the front line of where it's happening. And that was a brilliant debate, because they were brave enough to go, look, we have issues in the business. There's people ringing up and saying, oh no, I want to talk to a man, literally, you know. So, you know, I'm not in that environment, but I really do want to support women in that situation. But yeah, it's huge disparities when there comes to raising investment. And so I've definitely had challenges there. But, you know, I suppose, you know, men have challenges with investment as well. It's not an easy ride. You have to be very, but the statistics are there. You know, about 8 years ago when we were starting out, it was only 7% of investment was going into female-led businesses. So yes, the situation is improving, but we've a lot more work to do.
What do you think, you know, women should do when they face circumstances, either in relation to underpayment or lack of promotion, when they have that feeling, as women often do, that there is a problem with being somewhat discriminated against based on gender? But as you say, it can be very small, very insidious, very culturally ingrained. And so these issues are very difficult for any individual to point out without making it seem as though the problem is simply that they're not good enough. You know, it's a very fine line.
Yeah. And like that company that I presented to, you know, the women had come forward. I think you do have to just, you know, unemotionally make your voice heard. And if there's, you know, HR, or, you know, just go to the CEO, depending on the size of the company, whoever would look after that side of things, and just, you know, unemotionally put down what your experiences are, and ask about, you know, are there company policies to maybe look at this or to improve things? Because organizations do listen. So when I presented to the construction company, that's why they had got me in to present, because they thought, okay, step one is they'd gone through a painful journey. They had asked all their female colleagues. They had been brave enough to survey their colleagues to hear what their view was. But if that's not happening, and the results were quite, you know, telling or negative, so they said, okay, we're going to do something about this, and let's make our female colleagues visible and hear them, and let's get them supported. So what they did was they brought in a mentorship program as well, where, you know, some of the females were mentoring the male colleagues coming in, because that changes the dynamic. And also the males had female mentees, which was brilliant. And they were having great results with that. But I think that's what you need to do, just to make your voice heard. Put your hands up and voice your opinions and exactly what you're not happy about. And yeah, so it depends on the industry. Like in politics in Ireland, you know, it ranks 101st in the world for the percentage of women. And we're behind countries like Afghanistan or China. Only 1 in 5 TDs are, you know, are women. So Women for Election organizations. So there's organizations that are dealing with those inequalities in different sectors. So to maybe reach out, depending on what sector it is, to reach out to supports like that might be available to give specific advice and supports around how to progress in your career in that. Because, Yeah, it's actually an ethical question. You know, if we're encouraging females into tech or into, you know, into the academic arena where there's lots of professors, but they're maybe they're not reaching the highest levels, then that's an ethical thing. You know, we shouldn't be encouraging people in and filling the funnel if they can't fulfill their full potential. Like, what is it? We need to investigate as well that what is it in those environments that are preventing women from reaching their potential? What are the barriers? And by investigating them sincerely, finding out what they are objectively, it's only then that we can actually to fix them and to create policies or quotas or whatever it is that it'll take to fix.
Yeah, and I won't keep you too much longer, Leonora, and I really appreciate the time. But I am presuming, by the way, by that comment, that you are in favour of things like quotas or positive discrimination in order to correct what can be subconscious bias.
I do, yeah. I think even the terms positive discrimination, I suppose, I think that needs to be changed too. I see it as addressing inequality or correcting the imbalance. I think, you know, there's a lot of a conversation at the moment around, you know, how important words are, like, you know, violence against women at the moment, and even how that phrase is damaging. It should be violence committed by men, because then it's up to them to take ownership over it. You know, when you say violence against women or, you know, positive discrimination, it makes it, you know, our issue. It makes it, you know, the person who's discriminating against it makes it their issue, when actually there's other accountabilities that should be front and centre of the wording and the narrative. So I do agree in quotas, as you say, because... And I think you had a guest, Anne O'Leary, CEO of Vodafone, before, and she made a point that I absolutely agree with. Unless there are quotas, sometimes organisations don't know what they're missing. So it's only when you have diversity inclusion and you start that process and you have a quota and then you meet it and you realise, oh my God, there's more richer decisions, there's better discussion, there's better customer orientation, and there's a diversity of thought, which, you know, has been proven to improve your bottom line. So it makes business sense as well. So it's only until that happens, and maybe if quotas are the way to get there, then absolutely. You know, I worked in corporate Germany for a number of years, and they have quotas there. There was no way that culture was changing. There was very few women in Germany at, you know, C-suite level in large organisations. So unless there was quotas, I didn't see that changing for literally hundreds of years. And I think there's many countries that are the same. So, yeah, I think that's what needs to be done.
Well, finally, you mentioned Anne O'Leary, and one point that she made was that she has always been somebody who's been interested in lifelong learning. And I was interested to read, actually, going over your career, that you have a similar approach. I mean, you've been studying artificial intelligence. You've taken on diploma courses at King's Inn in data protection, I believe. You know, you're both working on the company while at the same time going back to school and being a student, and you have a young daughter as well. So can you speak a little on, yeah, I suppose, your attitude in that regard? Because a lot of people would say, I'm wrecked, I just want to watch some Netflix in the night time.
Doesn't mean we're not wrecked. but yeah, no, I, you know, I think it's really important, the lifelong learning piece, because I think learning is synonymous with leadership. I really do. And so I did a Harvard course in particular, which was the safety, quality, informatics and leadership. And that was just, and I had the honour of being, you know, asked to do the valedictory speech at the end at our graduation. And that really felt amazing, you know, because we had 92 peers from different countries in our class. And you know, my parents were there as well to support that. And it was just an amazing, but the learning from that, you could feed, it was very practical, because, you know, what you learned was directly related to, I always choose things that are directly related to my work. And so, you know, we had to do quality improvement capstones and So you could actually, any project you were involved with in work, then you can guide it, you can lead it better, you can challenge your thinking on it, you can back it up with robust study and research. So all of those things, and that's what I strive to do. I think there's a huge amount of research in most early stage companies anyway that's required. So if you can broaden your network and people to reach out to, it's a network thing as well. So we have a data protection WhatsApp group now. If there's any questions or any, you know, new stories or things we need to be aware of, there'll be somebody on that group that we can reach out to. There'll be resources. It's about building resources, building your learning, your growth. Because if you're not growing, you know, your company's not growing. I think you need to be growing. And the artificial intelligence thing, you know, for a tech business, it's really important to be able to have a strategy, you know, to look at how that can improve things in your business. And doing a course on it can help you to learn and to challenge your tech team on that. So, yeah, so no, but I really enjoy it. I really do. It's a challenge.
Brilliant. Well, Leonora O'Brien, founder of Pharmapod, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Nadine. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
And my thanks once again to Leonora O'Brien. Remember, if you'd like to listen back to any of our episodes to date, you can do so by going to businesspost.ie/podcast or look up hashtag How I Did It on Spotify, Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. Our previous guests include Hazel Chew, Lord Mayor of Dublin, Minister Catherine Martin and Anne O'Leary, Chief Executive of Vodafone Ireland. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with me, Nadine O'Regan, you can do so via Twitter DM at Nadine O'Regan. Right, that's it from us. Till the next time, do take care.
How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast.